There have been some alarming developments over the past week or so in North Korea. Last week, the country performed another nuclear test. This week, two U.S. military B-1 bombers flew over South Korea in a show of force against North Korea. General Vincent Brooks is commander of U.S. forces in South Korea.
North Korea's nuclear test represents a dangerous escalation and poses an unacceptable threat.
And now, a Japanese lawmaker who just returned from the North Korean capital, Pyongyang, says North Korea's nuclear program is directed at the United States. The country has claimed, after past tests, it does have the capability to strike the U.S. with nuclear weapons. That's a claim that experts say is not true. The leader of North Korea, 32-year-old Kim Jong-un, is an enigma. So to learn more about him, we're joined via Skype by Andrew Nathan, professor of political science at Columbia University. He specializes in Asian policy. And Professor Nathan, as you looked into Kim Jong-un, what are the three most important things we should know about him?
Three things. Well, he's come in as the third generation of a kind of crazy to us dictatorship, and he's inherited that system. He probably believes in the system, even though he was schooled overseas. And yet, even if he didn't believe in it, there's really no way out of it. You know, he can't reform, I think, probably, never say never, but I doubt he has any way of reforming the system without having the system collapse, because the rest of the world around him is in a kind of, you know, modern type of political systems, whether it's China or South Korea. Another thing to know is that he's very young, and Korean society tends to respect old people. So this is a strike against him. He has to be really strong in order to tame everybody around him. And I suppose a third thing to think about is that North Korea is a society of scarcity, and the regime survives through a very strict system of stratification where the military and the political leadership, but especially the military, which is really the pillar of his power, is privileged. And other people are doing very badly. And for a period of time, there was literally a famine, but now most of the population is just extremely poor. And so the system survives partly by the fear of those who have enough to eat and have warm apartments being purged, and the others cannot rebel because there is a privileged group on top keeping control.
Well, I want to go to what you just said about him being young. You write that he actually gained weight in order to look like his father and his grandfather, and that he's got the same hairstyle as his father.
Yeah. So there are these three generations of the Kim family, and they are presented in North Korean propaganda as something godlike. And there's a mystique that is handed down from father to son to grandson. And so to make that work, the propaganda people have groomed him to look like his father, and even more so to look like his grandfather. His father actually was quite skinny. But it doesn't make sense to you and me and to your listeners, I think. Why does that make any difference? It's a bit akin to some kind of religious sect, I suppose, where there's some magical quality. And if you read the North Korean propaganda, this is what they claim: our great leader who's descended from our previous great leaders and has this magic quality of leadership is going to make us all winners.
Do you get the sense that he himself believes that, or that he's just propagandizing?
We don't have, you know, access really. And everything that we know on the outside is part of the public show. There are rumors about not only him, but his father, not so much about the grandfather, in private, watching Western movies, drinking expensive brandy, you know, having European prostitutes and living a high life. And it's a little bit like that movie. I forget the name of the movie with Seth Rogen, that there's a secret private life, but we don't know that. It's all in the form of rumors. It's hard to believe that he literally believes in the whole system. But as I said, he's kind of stuck in this system. If he were to come out and say, this has all been a joke, the famine was a joke, and so forth, I don't think that would allow his regime to survive, because it's not an isolated regime. Right across the border, you have a highly prosperous and westernized South Korea, and across the other border, a very prosperous and not democratic, but prosperous and rather cosmopolitan China. So as soon as you begin to open up to the rest of the world, I think the North Korean population will be sort of scratching their heads and saying, what was all that about, you know, for the last how many decades has it been?
And by the way, the movie that you were talking about is called The Interview,
yes, thank you.
Which made a lot of news in this country when it came out as well.
It was an imaginative movie that might have struck close to the truth or not. We really don't have the scientific evidence, social science evidence to prove it.
We're speaking with Andrew Nathan, who's a professor of political science at Columbia University, about North Korean leader Kim Jong-un. You're listening to Here and Now. And Andrew Nathan, what do we know about Kim Jong-un's control over the military? We know that he purged dozens of high-ranking military officers, as well as some senior party and security officials after he took power. But how much control does he have over the military?
He seems to have a tremendous amount of control, and it's hard to imagine how that works. But I think the answer is he has purged and violently purged and, you know, killed and sent to labor camps families of senior generals for things, at least what they said in the public announcements, were that this general showed disrespect. He dozed off during a speech by the leader, things like this. There's probably more behind it. But he's been incredibly ruthless in purging people. And the one that was the most shocking, of course, was his uncle, not a military official, but at that time, the number two most powerful official in the whole system. And he purged his uncle, which is really rare, even in dictatorships, for the dictator to execute, not just purge, but kill a close relative, his aunt's husband. And so I think fear is a big part of the answer. Secondly, there must be, and again, we don't know how this works, but there must be an extensive spy system within the military and people reporting on one another in order to show their loyalty. So people are very much afraid. Third, he puts all the resources of the regime into the military. As I said, they have a privileged lifestyle, but in addition to that, they're ballyhooed in the propaganda, and the military has control of these wonderful nuclear weapons and missile development programs, so that the military is, I think, by and large, pretty happy with their role in the regime.
Do you think that he would ever, based on what you know about him, actually use a nuclear weapon?
The rational calculus is that he's using these weapon systems to deter what he thinks is an aim by the U.S. and South Korea to cause his regime to collapse, especially the U.S., less so South Korea, that the U.S. wants to use either military force or political subversion and propaganda to make the regime collapse, which would lead to the end of him, in the same way as, for example, Gaddafi. And so he's using this as a deterrent that is not intended to be used. Now, if he thought the attack was actually imminent on him, or the collapse of the regime was actually imminent, if, for example, we ramped up sanctions, as is being discussed by the administration, and got the Chinese to cooperate, which they probably wouldn't, but if we did, and he was looking down the gun barrel of more famine and an economic collapse, and the regime has not collapsed so far economically, they have a mild rate of economic growth. If he was looking at real collapse, would his rationality be the same as my rationality? I don't know. And I hesitate to put, you know, all of my retirement savings on that speculation. I might put part of it down, but not all of it.
That's Andrew Nathan, professor of political science at Columbia University, talking with us about Kim Jong-un, the leader of North Korea. Professor, thank you.
You're very welcome. Thank you.